This is Chris from Richmond, and you're listening to the Hood Rat Recap Podcast.
There was a whole weird thing with the horses. I think they know exactly what happened. I don't think it needs any explaining. I'm pretty sure I wasn't your first choice. I think I was the last one remaining. I wish we hadn't gone and destroyed it, 'cause I was thinking we could pull another weekender. If you still got a little bit of clairvoyance.
We got bored. So we started a about the best bar band in the land, man. This is the Hood Rat Recap, and we are back. We are your steady stream from the unified scene, all the news and reviews of the band that you love on your side of the pond, if we love on our side of the pond, or whichever side of the pond it is. Hello, everybody. This is Stage Right Mike on the mic, and I can talk hold steady all night. And when I like to talk hold steady heavy, I like to throw up the rat signal. And just like that, the Hood Rat Pack has assembled. And I can see him right now. He's got some new clothes from England. He thinks he looks like the Fifth Beatle. I think he looks exactly like Austin Powers. It's the unified scene's very own King of Queens, Gasper. Gasper, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, Mike. But you know what? I've been trying to get people to call me David Bowie.
Why is that, Gasper?
Well, because I'm a star, man.
Why? How's that going for you?
Not so good. Surprisingly, not so good. People keep calling me David St. Hubbins.
Such a fine line between stupid and clever.
Yeah, it's just clever. A little turnabout.
Spinal Tap?
I want to give credit to UK Rob and Hurricane Jess for that one. So thank you guys.
Well, I usually would have chimed in by now, but I don't even know what to say because I'm so mortified that you first off went with Bowie and then you went to David St. Hub, two classic icons, and you shit the bed on both. So
I think you really cranked it up to 11 on it, actually.
These go to 11.
I mean, I'm glad they're making a Spinal Tap sequel, and I can only hope they kill you in it.
Are they really making a stump? So
yeah, it's filming as we speak right now.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's amazing. So all these years later.
Well, that's the sound of our third mic and our producer, Kevin is whatever. Kevin, how you doing, though?
I'm doing well. I would like to thank UK Rob and Hurricane Jess for that suggestion, and I wish they would reach out to Mike and I next time they have any other good ideas regarding Freddie Knuckles, because I think we would chime in with something else. But yeah, so welcome back. I mean, it's been a couple of weeks since we've gotten together, and a lot has happened. You've gone international. You've taken the show to a whole new country. So why don't we get into your experience with the Weekenders? Because even though you were there for the Weekenders, you went in like 4 days early, right? You were like actually taking London by storm?
Yeah. I mean, look, if you're going to go over, you might as well check it out. Like, I've never been. It was a pretty amazing experience. Got to do a lot of cool stuff. Hit Stonehenge with Kat. Did a lot of stuff with Kat, actually. Kat is a great travel buddy, so big up to Kat, but Stonehenge, the Sherlock Holmes Museum. Dude, I went down to Buckingham Palace and met the king. Well, I didn't meet the king, but I ran into the king.
I saw the video.
It was a pretty crazy trip. I had a great time.
Wow. That usually doesn't happen. You usually don't always get to run into the king when you go to Buckingham Palace.
That's he heard the King of Queens was there, so he had to come out.
He had to greet, and then he thought the King of Queens was like, "Oh shit, Kevin James is here!" And then he saw you and got upset.
And before we get into the show, like one other thing I wanted to mention that we did that was really kind of cool and not something you would normally think about going over there. As we know, Kat takes some amazing pictures of old hotel signs, and ghost signs, and neon signs, and she took me to this place called God's Own Junkyard, which is this huge place of neon signs, like old neon signs, got all these amazing pictures, and I'm sure she's going to put them up on our Instagram. So Mike, we should link that to the Instagram to the show notes, because it was just very cool to see. Like, can't even really describe it. You have to see it for yourself, but some really cool stuff over there.
Cool. I can't wait to check it out.
But yeah, man, the Weekenders. So, I mean, off the bat, before we get into anything, like, I just want to address the elephant in the room. The did I get up front, and what do I think of the UK crowd versus the New York crowd? So the answer is yes, I did get up front for at least half of the first show.
Of course you did.
But I will say I spent the rest of the weekend more towards the mid, like not the back, but more towards the mid and off to the sides. It is a rowdy crowd. I don't know that it's necessarily rowdier than New York. It's different.
I heard about the beer showers. Did you partake in any of that?
So, yeah, they are fond of throwing their beers in the middle of songs as a sign of appreciation. I don't really know what that's about.
Now, the beer's thrown at the band or just up in the air?
No, like just up in the air. So, like, you're getting sprayed with beer. It is what it is. To me, like, it's, you know, I'm not throwing my beer. I'm drinking my beer. But it's,
I have to say, that must suck with the confetti, though, because once you're covered in beer, and then the confetti just sticks to you in some awkward
it becomes
ritual.
Wet confetti. Yes,
it does. Awful. Wet confetti yeti then at that point.
Is the confetti game better in the UK versus the States?
I will definitely say O'Mara, the last night, the small club, it was just insane how much confetti there was. But I'd say it's on par. To me, honestly, I think Massive Nights and the Weekenders are right neck and neck. I don't think you could say one is crazier than the other. They're both amazing parties. They're definitely an experience to have. So the major differences I found is, one, the crowd is a little younger in England. I don't know if that was just this particular year or if that's how it always is, but that's what struck me, is that it was a lot more younger people than I'm used to seeing in New York. So I think that lends to the energy. The second part is, when you think about it, these are two sets, right, at Electric Ballroom. One at O'Mara, which is smaller and separate. It's treated like its own thing. So when he's writing set lists, you got to get everything into two nights, whereas we're getting four nights at the same spot, more or less the same crowd, because a lot of people come all four nights. And so he's spreading those songs out. So I think that changes the energy. And then the other thing I will say is, they start drinking it like noon. Like, it's a different vibe of, like, we would go to a show and then go hang out afterwards. But the bars close earlier there. The whole thing is set up to, you're home by 1 o'clock. You know what I mean? Like, in New York, like, the party's starting at 1 o'clock. So you're coming in a little more boozed up than you would in New York, and I think that lends to it. So that's my theory on why people say it's so crazy there. And the last thing I will say is, their idea of a mosh pit is definitely not my idea of a mosh pit. Like, normally you have that circle pit, and it kind of, like, you're either on the outside of it or you're inside going in the circle and doing your thing. They do this thing where it's like an ocean. Like, it just, it's a wave that pushes up to the front and then recedes back to the back. And if you're trying to get from, like, the middle to the front, the game becomes like pushing your way through to the front, so you on the next wave in. So it gets a little hectic that way. At one point, half the mosh pit literally fell over. So wow. It just, like, collapsed on itself.
Wow.
But what was encouraging, and something I haven't seen in a long time since, like, when I was in mosh pits back in the day in my metalhead days, like, people falling down and getting picked up right away. Like, the whole thing stops and people, like, it was pretty cool.
I have noticed in shows I've been at now, even in the harder music scene, that is become sort of the etiquette. If there is, and rules of the mosh pit back in the day weren't always there. You used to just be like prance around till the guy got himself out of the way. Now you do get people stopping. They do pick you up. They do put a little wall around you and make sure the guy's okay. And then once he's okay, they just crash right into him again.
Right. I mean, that's the way it was when I was a kid. That's how I remember it. And then it got crazy where people started bringing hardware in and who had the crazy rings. And it was more about how much damage you could do. And that's about when I stopped going to mosh pits.
To your other point, too, where you're bringing up the set list, you got to realize, so Halt Steady is a band. Every time we've seen them, they usually go for 24, 25 songs a show. Generally, 25 is where they come. So when we see them on massive nights, that's 100 songs they get to like pull off over four nights. Whereas they're only doing two nights. You're trying to cram that into 50. And you know there's going to be repeat offenders regardless. Usually Sequestered in Memphis gets played every show. Killer Parties will be at every show. So, you know, it does, I imagine, make set list design a little more challenging on Craig.
Right.
As he's trying to figure out what to put into two shows for the Weekenders.
Right. I mean, all that being said, we do know, and I actually ran into Fiona while over there. Fiona, alumni to the Hood Rat Recap podcast, told us back then and reminded me when I ran into her that she did crack her ribs at a Weekender show, getting pushed up on the rail. So,
I remember that story.
Did you happen to run into Michael Hand while you were there?
I did not, but he was, well, I saw him, but he was busy, but he was DJing at O'Mara. So we'll get to that a little later. Cool. That was pretty cool. But, so the whole weekend really kind of kicks off with the guitar workshop. So, they brought us into Electric Ballroom. There's like a room upstairs, and Steve and Tad and a moderator, and it was just kind of an intimate conversation of the two of them noodling away and talking about their gear and a little bit higher tech than I'm used to. Cause I don't really know too much about that type of stuff. Like Kev, you probably would have been right at home.
Well, I was going to ask about that. How many people were in there, and you know, you're not a guitar player. So is it of interest to you, even though you're not a player, or is it pretty much set more for the guy that is interested in their tone and their tech and their, you know, their rig, et cetera?
I mean, it's definitely geared that way. They spent a lot of time talking about pedals. I actually got a cool shot of Tad's pedal board, which there are a lot of pedals on that damn thing. and so they do get to talk about how they're achieving some of the sounds and stuff. And there were a lot of questions that you could tell people knew what they were talking about. But as a layman who doesn't really know, like, it was still really interesting. And there were some funny moments. One particularly, I can't remember what song they were talking about, but Steve said they were talking about how they can't necessarily hear each other. You know what I mean? Because they're on opposite sides of the stage and the way monitors work. And so Steve was like, yeah, I actually don't know how this part of the song goes. And he plays it. And Tad's correcting him right there. So that was kind of cool. But yeah, it was cool. And it was intimate. There was probably about 25 to 30 people in the room. So it was small. And, you know,
was that a separate ticket for entry, or is that part of the bundle if you bought the Weekenders bundle?
They kind of bundle it. I think you could have gotten it, like, if you had night one, you could also get that. But they've put together a few packages, and that's been the way they've been doing it, is you could buy, you know, what they were calling a season pass, and I think that covered everything. I bought individual tickets and then got on to other stuff. But, yeah, that's pretty much how they do that. So that brings us into night one, which off the bat, so the opener for night one is Havier, I think, which is Billy Kennedy from Frightened Rabbit's band.
There's no excuse, I built this mess, took things too far, tore us apart. Student shit, drag my heels, smear the house in them. Curtains drawn, painted windows black to block your light. I'll hide away, running my mouth. Here comes the overflow, no thought, no care at all. Sat on the stairs, watching my river.
They were really great, very similar to Frightened Rabbit, and an awesome moment of the night. They played Living Color, which is, if you don't know, a Frightened Rabbit song. And it was I've never got to see Frightened Rabbit, and it's probably the closest I'll ever get to seeing that song performed by at least one member of the band. And that was very cool. And then after Havior, they walk on stage to Lido Shuffle, which I guess has become pretty much the staple for night one. Like, I think they did that for Massive Nights this year too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They did. Lido Shuffle sort of usually the kickoff of these event weekends for them.
Right. Hmm. And what you wind up getting night one, to me, was the most energetic set. It's in my... When I remember the set, to me, it was like, wow, there was all like the old classic songs. But when you go over the set list, that's not really true. It just felt that way. And I think it was because there was so much energy. It was like they exploded. We do get Adderall as song two, which you don't really see very often that high in the set.
That's really early for that song, yes.
Right. But, I mean, and Constructive Summer into Hot Soft Light is always a favorite moment of mine. You get that the same night. But when you go through the set list, like they do kind of mix it up. And it's funny when I was looking at it, because I really do remember it like, wow, there was a lot of Almost Killed Me off of that. And that wasn't really true. Right. Like there's probably like three or four songs of Almost Killed Me on it.
I think it might have been five, but
okay. But still, out of 25 songs, that's only a fifth of the set,
right?
You know,
the one thing I will say, which I was curious to ask, because I did see they played Carlos Is Crying. So how do, and we've talked about how it sort of goes over here sometimes, how do the UK fans take to that song, and how does it feel in the set? Because where I see it on this, it was between First Night and The Swish.
Right. So. It's funny because I thought about it while they were playing it, and there's definitely a better reaction over there to that song. I don't know if it was because there was so much energy in the set and people were just really excited to be there and they could have played anything and they would have been excited, but it's received better than I've seen it, better than in Brooklyn, better than in other places. It still is not the most energetic part of the set. But yeah. They do love the song.
I disagree with you guys. I think it's always received pretty well. I don't know what you guys are reading into it, but
so I mean, I think what we're saying is like when you're at a whole study show and it's a crazy sing along, you know what I mean? Like it doesn't have that vibe. It doesn't have its hand motions and its people jumping. I mean, it's not a jump around song, but like I also thought it was going to be a pretty big song in the set, and I think it comes off kind of mid, but the reception there was more than I've seen before.
Maybe I think to your point, just looking at the overall set list, like this is a very high intensity set list for them. There's a lot of more upbeat tunes. There's a couple of the slower ones, but like, you know, just reading it over, if I was going to one show and I was sort of a casual fan, this would be the one that I would feel, because you're getting Southtown Girls, you're getting Entitlement Crew, Sequestered America, like all of these big, How Resurrection Really Feels. There's all these upbeat sort of big songs for the band and their catalog, and you're kind of getting them all on one night. So if I had to choose one as a more casual fan, I think I would feel like I was getting more out of this one as maybe some of the other ones, where as a diehard, you probably want more of the deep cuts, which probably came on night two or night three. But for night one, this is pretty much big of a greatest hit show as almost you could get from them.
And that's kind of how it felt. It felt like a greatest hit show. So, and that's probably what I'm saying as far as like the energy goes, because they really had everybody hyped. Also, one thing to point out, so I remember we had asked, I don't remember if it was Jess or if it was someone else, is the song The Weekenders like a theme song to England, the way Massive Nights feels like a theme song when you're at Massive Nights? And I remember we were told, like, not really, but I thought I saw the most reaction I've ever seen from The Weekenders being played. It almost felt like it was a theme song to me. I mean, maybe I'm reading into it, but that it definitely went over that way.
It could have been the alcohol too.
I did not drink as heavily as I have in the past. I kind of made myself a promise after Nashville that I would not be doing that.
Okay. Just throwing it out because I know it came in the alcohol. So it would have been later in the evening for you in terms of alcohol imbibement. So
that is true. Mm-hmm. And so on to night two. So night two kicks off with soundcheck, hosted by Klaus Reiners, who is a German journalist. And that, to me, seems very much like many of the others that I've been at. If you haven't been to a soundcheck, it's pretty cool. It's a very intimate set. You're probably 40 to 50 people in the Electric Ballroom. And it's a Q&A into a song, into a Q&A.
They do the group photo?
They did do the group photo. Yeah. We'll see if we actually get this one, because I don't think we've gotten the one.
Did we get the Massive Nights one?
I don't think we did.
I don't remember seeing that.
That's because my eyes were like closed. That's why.
That's it. That's it. We can't put it out. Mike's eyes are shut. No one should have to see this photo now.
We do get some great songs in the soundcheck. The Oaks, On With the Business, which I don't think they play elsewhere in the weekend. Denver Haircut, Understudies, Modesto's Not That Sweet, which I know is always a favorite of Mike's.
Ooh, love it.
And so one thing to point out during the soundcheck party that we kind of got as some info about what's coming from Massive Nights is this is, I believe, the 10th anniversary of Teeth Dreams. And it got brought up that Teeth Dreams is a little absent from some of the sets these days. So I don't know if it's going to be an all Teeth Dreams night or a heavy Teeth Dreams night, but we are getting a Teeth Dreams night at Massive Nights. So for those of you who are looking for justice for Teeth Dreams, you will be getting it at Massive Nights.
I've never heard Runner's High live, so.
Is that true?
Yeah, I've never
heard. Oh, wow.
No, you just made it up.
Well, has anybody? Have you? I mean, who has?
I haven't.
So, I mean, a lot of that stuff I have. There's not much at this point that I haven't heard live. With the exception of like $40 and the songs that we clamor for that we're probably never going to get. But during the release of Teeth Dreams, like I saw them at Battery Ballroom a couple of times that year, and they were playing all that stuff. That was actually in heavy rotation.
But have you heard it since?
At the time, no, I have not heard it since. So it is absent from the set list.
And just taking a peek, they didn't play any Teeth Dreams that night. So if they were talking about it in the soundcheck party, they did not play any at that show. So it was like, hey, we're going to play it, but just not tonight.
Right. I don't think they played, if memory serves, I don't think they played Teeth Dreams at all, with the exception of Oaks.
And just on a side note, it doesn't feel like we're going to get a 10th anniversary Teeth Dreams with extended tracks on it. It just doesn't feel like that's coming.
Probably not. And that got asked at the Q&A. So one of the things they brought up is that there really isn't a lot of stuff that was left off of Teeth Dreams. So
interesting.
I would imagine you would wind up, I think Steve even said, he goes, there's demos, you know, like, and stuff like that. So we've seen that before. I think they did that. Did they do that on Heaven Is Whenever is the one with the demos?
That was the one they just re-released, right? Didn't that just come out not too long ago? I think it did have demos on it.
Right. And it just winds up being stripped down versions and alternate lyrics. And, you know, that's really cool for the Uber fan, but I'm sure it's not something they want to necessarily strive to put out. So we probably won't see that. But getting on to...
I have a question before you get into the night. What'd you do for dinner in between? Because at Massive Nights, we just usually eat at the Brooklyn Bowl. Did you eat there? Did you have fish and chips on some street corner? What did you do for your pre-show diet?
So I definitely did some fish and chips while I was over there because it felt like I needed to. Yes. But one thing I found about eating over there is... English breakfasts are huge.
Actual English breakfast, like with the blood pudding and everything.
I don't do blood pudding, but no. I mean, like
beans on your plate,
beans and toast, and poached eggs, and grilled tomatoes, and grilled mushrooms, and you know, potatoes, and sausage and bacon, which is not bacon, by the way. I'd like to make that point for our friends over the pond. Bacon looks like bacon. What you are making is Canadian bacon, which is ham. So
they will fight you to the death on that.
They probably will. But I will say that an English breakfast will sustain you through the day.
Wow.
So I didn't do a lot of eating. And outside of breakfast, it was like pub food here and there.
Gotcha.
And not necessarily at, not at the venue. Like, so we would kind of go to a thing like soundcheck or a thing like the guitar workshop and then pop out to another bar that's nearby. One of the interesting things about how they do food service over there is, so first of all, it's not like a waiter thing. Like in most places you're scanning a barcode and then you order it on your phone and they'll bring it over, or you got to go to the bar and get it. But what we found on two occasions, we popped out to this one spot to try to go get pizza, and they were like, yeah, there's too many people in the bar, so we shut the kitchen down. And I'm like, what?
Your hunger is not our priority.
Right. So, I mean, the drinking in England is strong.
Did you tip? Because I learned the hard way that they don't tip over there, but it's been a few years. When I was up there a couple of years ago for the Taylor Hawkins tribute, like we were in a spot where there was no like paying, everything was covered. So I was just curious if you did tip, because that does go over interesting if they don't still tip over there.
It's weird. It's like in some places you do, and in some places you don't, in some instances you do. So it seems to be drinking is no, you don't tip. And it's set up weird. Like you go get a beer and they scan your credit card on right. each beer, which seems crazy to me. Like I walked into a bar called Camden Head on my first night and I'm like, hey, can I open a tab? And they just looked at me like I had two heads.
They don't know what that means.
I mean, there were places I did open a tab, but it's not a common thought over there. It's like they're literally one for one, like scan my credit card each time. It's like, don't you guys get tired?
Well, because they don't know at what point a brawl is going to break out and they're going to get thrown out or somebody falls on their face. So they don't want to be on the hook for the beers then if you are the guy that falls out and gets chucked from the bar before your bill's paid.
It's a good point. Suppose that's fair.
That's probably how they learn that.
I suppose that's fair. So getting into night two, which kicks off with a really awesome cover band, Slatey, which is exactly what you think it is. It's a Slade cover band that are all female. It's Slatey.
Wow, awesome. Wow.
Right. Opened up their set with Come On, Feel the Noise and everything. Like they were a lot of fun.
Wow.
I like the idea. It's really starting to grow on me, this idea of like cover band for the last night at a big venue. They've done it a number of times in massive nights now. They've done it in the past in England with the Nuns of Brixton for the Clash cover band. And I think it's cool. It struck me as weird at first, but it there's something to it. It definitely works.
So That makes me, I think I always wanted to have a contest. If the Hold Steady had a cover band that was all women, what would be a good name? Would it be Southtown Girls or Girls and Girls in America or something? We'll have to ask our listeners. They'll come up with something good.
That'd be an interesting poll. You should put that up as a poll and see what we get back. I like that. So second night, they walk out to Bay City Rollers Saturday night, which, that just makes sense. It's Saturday night. And on this set, like I said, we got a completely different set. And one of the reasons that is this was horn night. So you had the Horn Steady, UK present for quite a number of songs, which always changes the whole feel of the set. And if you were to ask me which set was better, like, I don't know that I could tell you because they were just different and they were both great for two different reasons. Mike, you got Party Pit on the third song of the night. I don't know if they've ever played it that early.
That's some premature Party Pit right there. That's really early.
And I was going to bring up that they end the main set the first night with How a Resurrection Really Feels, but it's kind of almost trumped by they end the second set with Slapped Actresses. I love that, and I've loved it for a long time because of what happens at the end of that song, and it hasn't happened for a bit, but they do it in England. Is so at the end of Slap Actresses, you get the woes, the sing-along woes at the end, and like the band kind of walks off to some feedback, and the audience just kept doing the sing-along part until cool. They came back, and it was like egging them back on to go do some more songs, and it's such a great concert moment.
But I did notice too that Saturday night they gave you Sideways Skull for the second night, but as the second song. So it was sort of like, here's our new record right away. Which
did Sideways Skull get played all three nights also?
It definitely got played nights two and three.
Well, it was definitely night one. So if they played
that's a new standard, guys?
I guess.
You know, it's funny that you say that because we were wondering if something would be, and I feel like even in Brooklyn they played it a bunch of times. I wonder if, like you said, it's becoming like a sequestered in Memphis killer parties where it's a song they feel like they have to play, or maybe they just love playing it so much because it's the new favorite.
You know what's interesting is, so I was standing with Mike from Roanoke on night three in O'Mara, and when they played it there, he leaned in and he goes, "Man, it's such a good set." He goes, "But I could really do without this one." And I was like, "Really?" I'm like, "I like Sideways Skull." He's like, "I like it too." He goes, "But I don't know that we need to hear it every night."
Interesting. Wow. Yeah, I like that song too. But like I said, it might be my 10th favorite off their new album. But
I mean, I think it gets hard because like there's so many songs we all want to hear. And the ones that kind of become standards, it's like, well, that means you're not getting those other songs that maybe you do hope that they play.
Right.
You know?
And they don't give you a lot of Price of Progress from what it looks like. Even that night, I think there was only two songs.
Right.
But, you know, most bands, when they have a new album, they want to play four or five because, you know, they want you to go buy the record. But, you know, this is almost the opposite of that. They're playing, especially night two, it seems like much more of the catalog stuff and even some more deeper cuts than what you get on night one.
Right. I mean, I think you see that more in other cities. Massive Nights and Weekenders, I kind of get the impression that, like, this is their, like, so if Massive Nights is the beginning of the year and Weekends is the end of the year, depending on how you look at it, they may argue that it's the other way around. And it might be, but those are their two big parties. So, like, I don't think they're worried about promoting anything.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's you literally have people from all over the world already coming. They've bought your record. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about promotion at that point. But yeah, man, great.
You got Stay Positive and Josh show up?
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm.
Does he chug a pint? Is it a bigger beer when he chugs on stage in the UK?
It is not. He does the can routine.
All right.
But, I mean, it at this point, it almost doesn't feel like a whole steady weekend if you don't get Josh at least once. So it was a welcome moment for sure. And so that brings us to night three, which night three, I got to do something I've wanted to do for a long time. They hold the pub quiz. Martin Fitzgerald holds the pub quiz. He's the quiz master. And I got to be on Tad's team. And I want to thank Jess and Ben, who without them, I wouldn't have gotten to do the pub quiz. They were able to secure me a ticket. So thank you guys. That was amazing.
So how is that set up? I'm very curious because, you know, looking at what you would expect, there's six guys on stage. Does each guy field a team? And so there is it each guy and then five other people? So is it like limited to 30 folks? Like how?
Yeah, so the room is small, or at least in this particular venue, it's upstairs from O'Mara. And yeah, it's six teams. Each guy takes a team, and Mosh Pit Josh got to be on one of the teams. So he was like the bonus guy, I guess, on
Is it random? It's not like schoolyard rules, right? Where the six guys are there. I'll take this guy and I'll take this guy. And then the one guy left is like, I wasn't picked. I was your holdover. How does that
work? So the way Martin does it is he literally goes to each team and like, all right, pick a number from 1 to 6 and then introduces them like prize fighters. With like a little bit of like he hails from Minneapolis and, you know, blah, 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 blah. But it's very cool. It's extremely hard. I mean, I went in there thinking like, I know about music. I could handle this. And I was not useful to my team.
Hmm. Now, is it Hold Steady specific? Like, is it like the people that read like the gospel of the Hold Steady have the inside scoop because they know?
Not at all.
History? Oh, okay.
Not at all. So what it is like music and entertainment questions, some movie references or things like that, or public figures. But the sections, it's broken up into sections. I think there was, I can't remember, like maybe 70 questions total. Each section is themed around a Hold Steady theme. So like one that comes to mind is the Stuck Between Stations theme is music and movie questions that have to do with train stations. And so that's like your clue. But like, so one of the questions was, he talks about the movie, The Taking of Pelham 123, and what does the 123 stand for in Pelham 123? Do either of you know?
No,
that's not the train number.
So that was a popular answer. My answer was that it's the Red Line in Manhattan, because it is.
Right.
None of those answers are correct. It is the departure time of the train. And The interesting factoid that he gives is that that train line, they no longer let a train leave at 123 because of that incident.
Oh, wow.
Well, there you go.
But that's the level of questions you're getting. Like, they're hard. They're really hard. But thankfully, you have a team of 6 to 8 people with you, and it kind of becomes like a hive mind. Like, everybody knows a little bit of something.
So I'm very curious. I got to know, because we're going to put him on the spot. How was Tad as a teammate?
He was good. He was better than me, I will say that. There was one question where you probably would have excelled. They handed out a visual aid of 6 records, and these were records picked from the top 50 heavy metal records of all time. Oh. And I knew one of them. Tad knew a few, but honestly, the star of our team, in my opinion, was Jonas and Casper, which was surprising because the night before, Jonas was – like, you'll see pictures of him online with his shirt off, front row, like going nuts. But really smart guy, knew a lot about music and kind of helped carry the team. So those two guys.
Did you win?
We did. We are the 2024 winners.
Do you get like a little troll doll or a trophy or something?
No,
like,
it's all just for fun. Oh, but Tad says we should make t-shirts.
You should totally make t-shirts. Mm. We could do that. We know some people who could make t-shirts.
So I was pushing for our team name to be Tadside Radside because – you know, that's the thing. But I believe they went with A Tad Too Far was the name of our team.
I like that. That's good. I like it, A Tad Too Far.
But if you do get a chance to do the pub quiz, I highly recommend it. There is one coming up in D.C. at the D.C. shows, which I will be going to. So I'm kind of psyched about that.
Are you going to the pub quiz?
Yep. I will absolutely go to the pub quiz again. I don't know if Martin is doing that one. I hope he is. He talked to me a bit about how he really hopes to bring the pub quiz to Massive Nights. I don't know if that's something the band's going to want to do, because I don't know if they see it as a thing that's special to England, but I know he's really interested into doing it, and I hope he does, and I hope they get on board with it, because I think everyone would have a really good time with it, and it's definitely a fun experience.
Nice.
So, moving on to the beginning of Omera, as I said, Michael Han DJs the night, and it was a lot of great rock and roll music, like a lot of stuff that was right apropos for – we should have asked him the Meatloaf to the Billy Joel question, because he would have been spot on with it. We got some Thin Lizzy and all the stuff that you would expect.
Right. Mm.
And he ended his set, and made the walkout music, something we've never heard, but it was perfect. It was Werewolves of London.
Ooh.
Was the walkout music.
So his set just transitioned right into the show. It's not like the last song he played was their walkout music. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they set that up, but like, right. It just kind of made sense, right? Because like, he's playing and we're, you know, you're hanging out and you listen to the music, and then they just pump that song up a little bit more. And so the lights go down, you know?
So the name of this episode is American Hood Rat in London. Am I the only person? I was always upset that Werewolves of London was not in American Werewolf in London, the movie. Like, that always upset me. Am I the only
one? It kind of seems like it should, right?
It seems like it should have been a natural integration, but it's not. And it's
just
funny
like
that you
just
say
like
that
Iron Man was never an Iron Man, so I guess.
Right. Yeah. But it's funny. Wait, it wasn't the trailer. Iron Man was in the trailer.
No, it's also in the scene that they use Iron Man in the scene when he's. No, when he's building the suit.
Yeah, in the first movie. I think when he comes out of the cave, I thought Iron Man is playing.
When he's building the old school suit out of like the scrap metal. That's
I'm going to look that up because I don't know if I believe you guys.
But it's very funny that you bring that up about Warren Zevon and Werewolves of London, because I always think of the transformation in the, I think it's John Landis film, for Werewolves of London, even though it's not in the movie at all.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Also, just for whatever reason.
Also, that. Hungry Like the Wolf was a English band that didn't make that movie either. But let's get back on subject, guys.
Are you talking about Duran Duran?
Yeah.
I think that would have changed the whole feeling of the movie.
I mean, come on.
I'm a big Duran Duran fan. I'm a Duran Duran fan.
I love Duran Duran. I used to work with Duran Duran, but it's just like, I would not want to see I'm on the hunt, I'm after you, and the girl yelping in the middle, unless like he's slaughtering her. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
They could have wore mascara like they did on the videos. It would have been fine. It would have been awesome.
Now we're talking about Duran fashion. Oh, we're in hell.
Yeah.
Can we get back to O'Mara?
Sure. So O'Mara, like I said, was its own thing, man. Like this kind of felt like this was the show for the hardcores. I mean, the show, they open up the set with Milk Crate Mosh.
You know, the chin was just like Gideon.
It felt like this was the show for, like, I don't want to say true fans, because that's not what I mean, but it was a set for like the Hold Steady faithful, like, definitely. Another set where you're getting a lot of heavy songs, but like from all over the place. I mean, we got Denver Haircut, and we get Modesto's Not That Sweet that night. T-shirt Tux and Sketchy Metal, and one of my favorite songs that they ever play is Sweet Pain, and you don't get that one very often. But an absolute highlight of the night, and you'll see this in the Hold Steady group, the Positive Posting group, Oaks So we've heard Oaks played several times over the past year. It went from a song that we never hear to a song we hear all the time. But the version of Oaks that we get is like the full extended version, like that long guitar solo. And like, man, did it fucking burn. It was great. So I'd be remiss if I didn't point that out specifically. And so one of the fun things they did that felt very much like Steady Freddy and the Confetti Yeti was Steve and Craig were doing these like weird interludes, almost like a like on a rap record, where Steve would be like, "Hey, you know what we should do is we should play a song, play a show in England." And Craig's like, "Yeah, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Like maybe we'll do three." He goes, "Yeah, we should definitely do that. It'll be like a thing." And like, what would we call it? And of course, we'll call it the Weekenders. And they go into the Weekenders. Like,
that's cool. It's funny. I saw on the Instagram when you bring up the Oaks performance that night that I guess originally it was supposed to be Stay Positive on the set list. Mm-hmm. And they crossed it out and wrote in Oaks in a Sharpie.
Right.
So yeah. I guess... I saw that on the Instagram for that show when I was scrolling through and I was like, oh, look at this, audibles from the Hold Steady. And now that you say it was this long extended jam, it makes it that.
I mean, it was the type of version of a song that like if you had to pull out like a historical Hold Steady moment, it'll be among them because it was that good. Yeah. And then our encore was incredible. I mean, they come out to certain songs, which I mean – you can't get a better song for them to come out to on an encore, in my opinion. Multitude of Casualties. Oh, and before I forget to mention this, another amazing moment, very similar to Oaks, is they play We Can Get Together, which, Kev, that's your song. That's your lead-in music every episode. Oh, and people were, like, bawling. Like, oh. Like it was an emotional version of
the song. They were just crying because I wasn't there to.
I mean, that could be.
Those are my people. I'll mirror my folks.
So, and just to set the stage a little bit for what O'Mara is, for anyone who's been to New York's the Gramercy Theater, it's a smaller theater. It's kind of Kev, remind me, is it an old movie theater?
It used to be a movie theater that they converted into a performance space. So there's like the seats that slope up in the back, and then there's like a GA floor area.
Right. So this is basically picture the same thing with the levels. No seats. They took the seats out. Mm-hmm. But you have the different levels and then a GA floor area. But like if you're looking at Gramercy Theater, it has a middle, a left, and a right. Like this was just the middle.
Right.
So it's a tiny, tiny place. And the stage is like, I think the smallest stage I've ever seen them play on. Like Kevin and I, a little known fact, used to have a cover band back in the day where we played in front of,
we don't talk about this band very often.
Church youth group. And I think that stage was bigger than the stage they were playing at O'Mara. So it doesn't get much more intimate than that. It was a very cool experience.
Yes.
So,
well, I got a name for you guys' band. Was it the most middling metal band in Middle Village or what?
we were actually known as Fuzzy Jesus.
Fuzzy Jesus. That was the band. And it came from a rug that we had because we had a Fuzzy Jesus rug that was like,
yeah,
that really pulled like the room together.
Like, yeah, exactly. It's what do they call those? Like, they're like they're not really rugs. They're meant to like hang on a wall or something like that. It's like that shag material, but there's an image in it. And it's, so it's this shag rug of Jesus. It's the weirdest.
And since since it was a religious youth group, it just made sense. Like it all tied together and all the adults were like, this band is so spiritual. And we were singing Tools. Sober and shit. So go figure.
Sounds like
and
a South Park episode to me, guys.
And not well. We were terrible cover band.
I don't know. Some people wrote us up. We paid them off, but it was still good.
But yeah, so that's my wrap up of the Weekenders. One more thing to mention, they have already announced next year's Weekenders. It'll be March 7th through the 9th of 2025.
Oh, so, man, it's a shame that you won't be able to go back.
I mean, I'm going to start saving my money now. just a few things to a few people I want to mention who really made this weekend amazing. Jess and Ben and Rob and Jonas and Casper and Fiona. And I ran into Dave Woodcock. He was there. Ooh. And like all you guys really helped to make like your city a second home. So thank you so much. This was very cool.
Yeah.
Dallas and Big Mike from Roanoke and Nick and Chris. And Lee Allen and Lisa Jane, who do the photography and video, they were really cool people. And especially Kat, you made it a great vacation. Thank you so much. So
Kat's going to start a website, travelwithkat.com.
She should.
If you want to go there and just book her for future plans.
She's on the payroll. I mean, not only is she our official photographer, she's also like a field reporter at this point. So.
Yeah,
she is.
And she goes on some adventures, man. Like I went and did the Weekenders, came back and passed out for a couple of days. She went to Glasgow. Like she's still on vacation right now as we record this episode.
Wow.
So she's got some energy to it.
Yeah. And like, as we're recording this episode, today was the day that the DC tickets went on sale. So,
yep.
And I'm pretty sure it sold out already. So if you missed out, you might want to keep checking, but I went and looked before. It looks like 9:30 Club is already sold out. So,
right. Although there are always tickets available.
Yeah, I was thinking of trying to get in
the group and
somebody always find them.
Dude, you should come. I'm actually going to bring Heather and Jackson with me on this trip, so that'll be cool.
What is it? October?
No, it's June.
Oh,
yeah, it's June. I want to say 20th and 21st, if I have it right.
Okay.
Yeah, I mentioned it to Mel, and she said I would like to go to DC. She didn't say she wanted to go see the whole city. She just said she'd like to go to DC. So we'll see.
Well, if you want to go and you are stuck for tickets, you let me know. I guarantee you I could find you some tickets.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, just to get back to the trip while you're over there, for our listeners, there's a lot of folks that you chatted with that we might see on upcoming episodes of the Hood Rat Recap, which will keep some surprises. But
yeah,
sounds like... well, it was going to be some cool things for everybody who's listening that while Gaspar was over there, he definitely pimped the show and a lot of people sort of showed some interest. So,
yeah,
we'll keep you posted as that goes.
And the meatloaf to the Billy Joel. Certain songs, they get so scratched into our souls.
All right, guys, you know what time it is? It's a little diamonds in the drain time. This is where, you know, we rolled the last three newest albums. We would roll a track number with our 10-sided D&D dice, and we did the last three albums. But now we are on to the first three albums, and we are rolling a dirty dozen 12-sided D&D dice for Diamonds in the Drain. I can't say that many Ds. That's too many Ds. So let's just get to it.
And we get track five.
Ooh, these middle tracks are always bangers.
Track five. And with these new rules now where we're back to only... three songs.
Yeah, so
ties
I didn't say
happen.
That. We got to assign a gold, silver, and bronze medal. There's no ties allowed. Even though we like ties. All the songs, there's no ties allowed.
These are actually three hard ones. Like, I would say almost harder than we've done already on this round of Diamonds in the Drain. So, Mike, why don't you tell us what the first song up will be?
Okay, so off the first album, number one, Almost Killed Me. This is where we get the lyrics from Meatloaf to Billy Joel that we like to use in our game. It is certain songs.
And G4s for the lovers. And the hard drugs are for the bartenders. And the kitchen workers and the bartenders' friends. And they're playing it again. And Ellen Foley gives them hope. Certain songs, they get scratched into our souls.
And gee, what do we have from Separation Sunday?
So Separation Sunday is Charlemagne in sweatpants.
Which means from Boys and Girls in America, we get the classic First Night.
On our first night, she was golden with barlight and beer. On our
bangers, guys. Bangers. All three.
Yep.
So, as usual, Mike goes first, which always makes me happy.
Not me.
I get to watch you guys go.
I got to set the table. Okay.
Tell you why you're wrong. It's my favorite.
I guess we'll start with the gold medal first. And I guess you guys are all old enough to know. I'm going to go with Certain Songs as my gold medal. This is just when I first heard this song, I just said, you know what? This group's not normal. This song is just something different. It's just an amazing song. I don't know. It just hits me in a really good spot. And it's off the oldest album. I never get tired of hearing it. So that's going to be my gold medal. And then for silver medal, this might get a little controversial here, but I think I'm going to go in chronological order. I'm going to go with Charlemagne in Sweatpants. I just love how Craig sounds like a soulful preacher in here, just yelling out the lines. It's a different song. He's kind of yelling out the lines. It's a weird title, a weird song. Charlemagne gets uptight, running numbers between cars, running girls between the cars. I just love it. I just think it's a different song. And then, you know, I'm a true Hold Steady fan. I like all their songs. So this means I'm giving First Night of Bronze, which I think will be controversial. I know that a lot of people consider it their favorite ballad or slower song. And I think it's a great song. I mean, I really love the chorus, Boys and Girls in America. And I love, you know, when they kiss, they spit white noise. You know, that makes me think of my white noise joke. You know, I want to get a white noise machine that says, do you think Brandon's going to get into a private school, or do you think Starbucks has a gluten-free menu? I'm just going to have a bunch of white people talking and making white noise. But anyways, that's my next podcast idea. So I don't want to give that out. But First Night, you know, it's considered a ballad. I really love Citrus. I really love Lord, I'm Discouraged. I like those songs better for ballads. Are we calling Certain Songs a ballad, maybe even? I love this song, First Night, but I think it gets played too much, especially on the first. I know they like to play it on the first night of a long weekend. So I just think it's a little overplayed for me, but, you know, of course, I love every Hold Steady song. So I'm going in chronological order, and that gives us to you, Gasper. Gasper, what do you got?
All right. Well, again, this is a hard choice. I love all three songs. These are three songs that I would always love to get in any set. But you got to pick one, right? So
there can be only one.
I'm going to say Bronze for Charlemagne and Sweatpants, which hurts to say because I love the song. It's going by my criteria that I laid out. It's quintessential to the set. It's carrying the storyline. Dirty bluesy guitars on that song just kill me every time, but that one gets the bronze. And then, I mean, it might as well be a tie for the gold, but it can't be, right? So I'm gonna go with First Night, which again is hard to say. It's one of my favorite songs they play live, because you get that crescendo moment. It's a great ballad to start, but it doesn't stay there, and it just explodes at the end, and it's a huge crowd moment. It's also big for the storyline. It's one of the better Hold Steady songs, in my opinion, but there can be only one, and that's Certain Songs. I mean, if I were going to get a tattoo, it would probably be something from Certain Songs. Those lyrics are amazing. I mean, you know exactly what he's talking about when he says certain songs get scratched into your soul. That's how I rate him.
Wow. So, and an interesting twist, because we don't usually agree. I do agree with somebody today. So my bronze is Charlemagne and Sweatpants.
Okay.
I know it's revered by many. I know the storyline is important. They're just, and out of these three, it's the most upbeat song, but it's probably my least favorite of this grouping, just because you can't compete with the other ones. So There's also a weird part in the middle that always got me where the line is, I'm trying to remember what it is. She always makes that call. First it makes her feel tall and then it makes her feel small. I felt like it was kind of Dr. Seuss-ish. I can't even say that without
easy for you
bubbling
say.
My fucking mouth. Okay, Dr. Seuss-ish a little bit. Like,
I mean, I always took it as kind of Alice in Wonderland-ish.
Okay, well, cool, maybe. But like for me, it just is not some of the finer lyrics that I love from the band. So that's my bronze. My silver is First Night. I love the song. I always love the... We never get as high as we felt on that first night. It's a thing you can sort of relate to and kind of feel, but the gold for me is certain songs. And it really comes down to the Meatloaf to the Billy Joel references and spending many days in a diner with the old school jukebox where B1 would be Only the Good Die Young and what is it? C9 is Paradise. Like I remember throwing my quarters in for those songs and the way it would play. And it's just such a good memory to me that it just speaks to me and easily why it's my favorite in this batch. That whole, you know, spending many days smoking in a shitty diner and playing the jukebox with the quarters in our pocket. It just totally hits. So that's a great song and a great memory for me. So that's my gold.
Nice. So what you're trying to say is I'm right.
What I'm trying to say is for once you came back. Look, after your Freddie Knuckles, at least you could do something right on this show. So you know what? You're welcome. So
all right.
Sorry, Mike, you're the odd man out. So
I was the odd man out last week and Lauren from St. Paul, she was online and she was kind of agreeing with me. Is there like a Midwest and East Coast split here? Because you guys didn't like Don't Let Me Explode and me and Lauren thought it was the best song. So we think there might be a split going here between coast, Midwest and East Coast. You know what? Is it like rappers?
It's true. And you and Lauren bring up a point. We actually, Gasper and I have agreed 2 episodes in a row, which is actually sort of scary. So
that's fair. But just to clarify, I never said I didn't like Don't Let Me Explode.
No, I just gave it a bronze when I gave it a gold.
You gave it a bronze. You might as well look. You almost kicked it off the podium if there would have been a fourth song in that mix. So there you go.
I mean, when you put them up against these other songs, it gets hard.
I would just like to thank everybody for voting on those polls. They've been huge numbers, and I hope you're having fun with them.
Yeah, we can't wait to see the poll results in this one and when everyone agrees with Gasper and I about Charlamagne and Sweatpants. Which brings our totals for this week to the overall bronze is, as we said, Charlamagne and Sweatpants. The silver goes to the immaculate First Night. And the clear runaway, unanimous gold medal winner, the only thing we've agreed on this week, is Certain Songs with 9 points.
All right.
Which brings our album totals, just for those keeping score at home, to Almost Killed Me is 16 total. Separation Sunday is 17 total. And Boys and Girls in America is 19 total.
Ooh,
holding off.
Close. It's a tight race. 16, 17, 19. It's close. Three songs in. We are very close. So far. Yeah. Mm. Separation Sunday is sitting comfortably in silver, even with ones from Don't Let Me Explode and Charlamagne and Sweatpants. It's because it had the boost of your Little Hood Rat friend, which really...
Charlamagne and Sweatpants coming in third this week. That makes me have second thoughts. You know, I always wear that Charlamagne baseball jersey to the last couple of concerts, and I was going to wear sweatpants. But then I thought too many people would be making the joke. You know, it appears that Charlamagne doesn't have much in his sweatpants, so I was kind of worried about that joke. So I'm going to nix that right now. I'm just nixing that right now.
You're going to Stevie nix that.
Stevie nix that. I'm going to spill it, and I don't mind. But anyway.
All right. Some songs, they get so scratched into our souls. Certain songs, they get so scratched into our souls.
Yeah, that sounds like a great time you had there, Gasper. And I just wanted to again thank, it sounded like you talked to Fiona and Dave Woodcock. They were past guest on this podcast when we were just very first getting off the ground. I think we had bad, I think we were FaceTiming them. We just didn't have our system or sound down yet. So I just like to thank them for living through those times.
Yeah.
And as always, if you enjoy what we do, give us a like and a follow on socials. We do this because you guys follow, and we have to say with each episode, we're always surprised and just grateful for everybody that tunes in. We see the numbers. We see those that go in and engage with us in our polls, and really we do appreciate it, and we do it because we love the band as much as you do, and when you guys tune in, it really helps us. So if you tell a friend, you give us a like and a follow, all of that stuff goes a long way to keeping the show going. And you know, Gaspar, why don't you tell them where they could find us?
Sure. If you're looking for our socials or our email address or even just other episodes of the Hood Rat Recap, the best jumping off spot is always our Linktree, linktr.ee/thehoodratrecap. And Mike, if they wanted to leave us a voice message, where would they do that?
I'm glad you asked that unsolicited question there, Gaspar. All they have to do is click on the link on the show notes and talk into their phone and leave us a 90-second message. If that's not long enough, then leave two or three messages.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us. I'm Gaspar. That's Mike. That's Kevin. And us guys and all you guys and gals, we are all the Hood Rat Recap.
Hey, so guys, you know, monikers are big on this show. You know, I'm Stage Right Mike. We got Kevin as Whenever. We got the Unified Scenes King of Queens. You know, those are all pretty good names. But I was thinking, you know, since this show happened in England, I was thinking of how we could. We have a big audience in England. I was thinking how could we get some monikers that fit in more with the England scene? And I think I came up with a few. Would you like to hear them?
Yeah, what do you got?
Is it Crank Wankers? No.
It's a lot like that one, Kevin. But, you know, I don't know, Gaspar, when you're over there, if you saw, they exchanged the guards at the Majesty's Royal Palace. And, you know, I was thinking, I don't know if you got to see that, but it seemed like the guards are always pretty stiff at Majesty's Royal Palace, but they're not as stiff as Kevin is Whenever on the dance floor at a typical Brooklyn Bowl show. That's right. Okay, so maybe that one's a little long.
Did you call me stiff?
I think.
Okay, well.
There you go, stiff.
Here's one that we got back. Many people, you know, England is so old that, you know, England is very old. In fact, they once stood up to the Romans.
I don't like where this is going already.
Yeah. But Stage Right Mike is getting so old that he often has trouble standing up inside a Trojan, so. You know, again, I don't know what these mean, you know, all the time, but, you know. Oh.
There's a pill for that.
A little blue pill? Okay.
A little blue pill, yeah. I'm here to help.
Okay. So here's one. Okay. So, you know, Roger Bannister, he was, when you think of England, you don't think of these great track stars. But back in the old days, they thought human beings could not run a mile in less than 4 minutes. They thought it wasn't something possible they could do until the great English runner, Roger Bannister, in 1954, he ran the mile. He was the first human being to finish the mile in under 4 minutes. But the Mrs. King of Queens doesn't think that's a big deal because she thinks Gaspar often finishes in under 4 minutes. So. Again, I don't know what these mean, but okay. And we're almost done here.
Wow.
You know, the great Winston Churchill, you know, in war-torn England, he said the greatest line of one of the greatest lines of ever. He said, you know, there's nothing to fear but fear itself. But obviously, he never seen Stage Right Mike dancing to the opening chords of Construction Summer, because that's pretty scary. I think that's really scary.